Thank you for being here this morning. I'm going to be talking about some research that we did on census undercounts in the 2010 census. So, and I'm going to do the first part of the presentation, and my colleague Eileen Jacobs is going to come up towards the end. Okay, perfect. All right, so why does census coverage matter? Why do we care? And the main reason that we care is that uneven census coverage, that is differential undercount, results in misallocation of program resources, not only between states, but within states and at local and county levels. For example, California had a census 2000 undercount that was 29% higher than the national average, and it's estimated that this resulted in a loss of $1.5 billion in program funding. Then that's overall undercount. Then there's differential undercount within groups, like undercounts of ethnic minorities and socioeconomic groups that might make an area look more affluent than it is or less in need of services. And as many of you know, there is no more the census long form, that function has been taken over by the American Community Survey. And so that might seem to be a good, but the sample for the American Community Survey is pegged to the census results, so census undercounts are replicated in the ACS. So we're hoping that the lessons learned from this project can be carried forward to the ACS. So let's talk about the historical landscape of differential undercount. We've been working, Ed, Eileen, and I, on census undercount for the past 20 years, so three censuses. And basically in 1990, we used, there was a lot of research done by the census, and we used that to simulate undercounts of farm workers. And we found that farm workers who were in the United States during the census time were undercounted between 48 and 52%. Then there were clearly census tries to improve from census to census. And so we looked at the 2000 census, and Eileen and Ed did research in five rural counties, and they found 11% to 38% was a typical undercount area in the neighborhoods that they looked at. So coming into the 2010 census with a lot of experience looking at this, California Rural Legal Assistance worked with JBS and funded by the California Endowment to design a study that would look at the impact of not only measured census undercount, but look at the impact of the efforts that the census was taking to improve the count. So this include identifying patterns of differential undercount and overall undercount, and looking at census promotion, their media, looking at the impact of key operations in the 2010 census, including targeting the bilingual form to Spanish speaking households, and also delivering in-person forms to households that don't have mail service. And also assessing the impact of a program of Be Counted and Questionnaire Assistance Centers, where people could show up and get help with their forms. And finally, the main point here was to assess the impact of the Census Bureau's Collaborative Partnership Program, of which CRLA was a participant. And so we looked at the areas where CRLA was working, which is the San Joaquin Valley, Central Coast, and South Coast counties of California. So our method was to sample in 30 hard-to-count, identified by the census as hard-to-count, tracts in these 10 California counties in these areas. So we had, and 20% of the nation's farm workers live in these counties. So we had a multi-stage random sample, and we sampled 423 households. We did face-to-face interviews conducted by bilingual field representatives, and we did offset sampling. That is, that we had a list of locations, we selected the housing unit that was sampled, and then we went to the one that was next to it. And that allowed interviewers to actually gather the information on houses that were not on the list that were in that location. So we were able to get unlisted households. There was an initial interview in May to July, just right after the census period, and then a return interview at the end of census's non-respond follow-up in July and August to see if two households that had not sent back in or participated in the census before the May through July interview. So the sampled households included, one-third of them where there was no more than an elementary school education, and in one-quarter they were linguistically isolated, there was no adult who spoke English. Two-thirds of the households were Latino immigrants, another 7% were U.S.-born Latinos, 18% were non-Hispanic whites, and the remainder were from other ethnic and minority groups. So basically what we found was that some strands of census promotion did effectively reach Latino households. For example, virtually everyone remembered seeing a TV spot or hearing a radio ad. And though TV had more penetration, radio got to some households that TV didn't. Print was not nearly as effective. Only about three-fifths of Latino households and the similar proportion of non-Latino households remembered any kind of print advertisement. On the ground, census promotion reached 14% of the households, which is a lot if you're talking about actually going house to house. We feel that the contribution that this part made was it increased people's confidence in the census, their confianza, and may have increased their willingness to participate. Informal social networks are actually very important. Almost half of people had been urged by someone in their network, a friend, coworker, or neighbor, to participate. So our conclusion was that mass media campaigns are not all that effective, and that actually more targeted media is needed, and leveraging social networks and community-based approaches. All right, so now we've looked at how the census delivered the messages. Now, in talking about what their actual messages were, did they have an impact on mail return of census forms? And 2 out of 5 households had already been convinced they should fill out the census form before hearing the message. However, 38% of previously unconvinced people did say that the messages helped to convince them, so that they were effective. About 9 out of 10 Latinos believed that the community benefits of the census were important. The confidentiality message got across or was believed less, in that 3/4 of people did believe that the census was confidential, but the remaining quarter were sort of evenly split between people who were sure that the information was shared and people who were not certain. So the targeted mailing of the bilingual census form worked really well, and this was one of census's big improvements. That it looks that through their various methods of delivering forms, over 95% of surveyed households got a form. They either was mailed to them, it was dropped off because they weren't a mail service form, or they got a visit from an enumerator when they failed to turn in the form. 3/4 of the linguistically isolated households did get a bilingual form. So that was good, but there's still 25% to improve that targeting. And overall, the male participation, 77%, is much higher than was reported in the past. And we attribute a lot of that to actually getting a form in a language that you can use or that you can contact someone to help you use, like a friend or a neighbor or a family member. What we found that farm worker households and others where the head of household had little education were as likely to return forms as those with households with more education. However, recently immigrated households were less likely to return the form than settled immigrants. The question assistance centers and be counted centers. Now, these were more accessible in the past, and partly because partnering organizations helped identify locations where the census should put these. However, less than half of the households knew where they were, and most of them said that they didn't need to fill out this form. And part of the reason that we think that they didn't need to fill out the form was because that they didn't need assistance filling out the form was because the form came in a language that they could use. This had a big impact. And also the fact that they used their social networks to help fill out the form, and that the people who really have a hard time getting enumerated and need help have a hard time getting to a questionnaire assistance center as well. So we're proposing that census should have sort of mobile question assistance centers, the individuals who go out in the community and actually volunteers going house to house. So, the bottom line. What were our count rates? So basically, we looked at 2 factors. One is total household omission. That means that the household was completely uncounted. It isn't on the master address file. No enumerator visited. No information came back from that household. And our conservative estimate is that 3.8% of households fell into that category, and 4.9 or 5% of the population. The population size is larger than the number of households because these were large households. We also measured partial household omission. That is when some people on a household are reported, but others not. Often in a doubled up household, the household that pays, you know, that is the lessee may report, but the doubled up household may not report. And this was 3.9% of households, and it was 2.2% of the population because some of these households were single males or single individuals. So our aggregate undercount was that 7.7% of households and 7.2% of persons. So this is a major drop. This is a big success for census. It's still an unacceptable level of undercount, but we see a trend where census is improving over time. All right, so what did we find out about who was being missed? So basically, it was the most recently immigrated households that were most likely to be totally omitted. And these households, so 17% of immigrants who were there, who had been in the United States for less than 6 years versus 1.6% for those who had been living here longer than that. And this is primarily because recent immigrants live in households that are hard to find. They live in low visibility or non-standard housing. They live in back houses. They live in garages, backyard trailers, things that may not appear to be a housing unit. The other thing is people who are living in subdivided living spaces. So this, again, the census considers these people to be a single household, but in no way when, as I've seen, there are three families living in a two-bedroom apartment, do those families consider themselves to be part of a large household, even if there is some, even if they are somewhat related among the families. So the differences between the census idea of the residence rules, who you should report on, and people in the household's idea of who belongs to their household conflict and result in this partial household omission. And again, about 8% of the addresses we surveyed were non-standard housing units, and about 8% of the addresses had doubled up households. All right, so our overall conclusions. That the Census Bureau has made dramatic progress since 2000 in decreasing differential undercount of immigrants and farm workers. And the targeted mailing of bilingual forms, the expansion of community partnerships to improve the master address file, all the different strands of the census promotion, and particularly using this update leave procedure to deliver census forms to households that they know have no mail delivery or use post offices contributed to this progress. Nonetheless, undercount in these rural hard-to-count tracts is 5 to 6 times the national average and will also result in continued disparities in allocation of program funding for health, education, and social programs. And also, surprisingly, our study suggests that some factors that have traditionally been associated with differential undercount, race, educational attainment, and language, are diminished. However, the census does, so those people are more inclusive. What turns out to be more critical is the being part of a recently immigrated population. So the poorest, most marginal populations are still those that are being omitted. And in rural California, this means particularly the indigenous populations of Mexico and Guatemala, particularly people coming from the Mexican states of Oaxaca, Chiapas, and Guerrero. So, let me check my time here. Okay, we're good. Specific implications of the undercount. First of all, that one of the things that we don't, that since the census is improving, a lot of funding formulas have floors or hold harmless provisions, and these actually now have a negative impact because the recent census data is better, so anything that pulls historic data results in more differential impact on these communities that have historically been undercounted. What we're advocating is, since the census by Supreme Court decision can no longer adjust, our our suggestion is to, and advocacy will be around moving the adjustments from the Census Bureau to the agencies that have funding formulas, and to ask those agencies to take into account the differential undercounts that are known, they're researched by us, by the Census, by many others, in their funding formulas, and there's certainly nothing that forbids them to do that. So our recommendations is that we should carry these forward to the ACS, as I said before, and that the Census Bureau really needs to get a more realistic idea of household and instructions for dealing with partial household emission and doubled up households. Also, when picking enumerators, they should focus less on their formal education and more on their ability and language skills to deal with the populations that they'll be enumerating. And the Census Bureau needs to really address the master address file. It's no longer that people don't get the message to fill out the form. It's no longer that people don't believe they should fill out the form. It's that they don't get the form. And so using their partner agencies to sort of wait till the end census time to cheerlead for let's fill out the census form is not as effective as, I mean, that should still be done, but we suggest adding to that that the partner agencies should be used to help update the master address file, because these agencies do know where the people are, they know where those unlisted housing adjustments are. And again, the census itself should work, should encourage agencies, knowing its undercount, providing its data on undercount to agencies to help them adjust their funding formulas. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Eileen Jacobs, who's the litigation director of CRLA Foundation.
Thank you, Susan. Actually, it's California Rural Legal Assistance, Inc., not Foundation. Two separate organizations, which I need to say for the record. But thank you. I'll try to take only a couple of more minutes. And I want to cover three points. One is, why should you care about the census? Two is, what are the most serious issues with implications for undercount, differential undercount in the census? And three is, what's happening in the future that you should be aware of, and what can you do about it? One, I'm a lawyer. I represent farm workers and low-income people throughout rural California. I'm not in public health. I'm not a health practitioner. Why am I here? I'm here because I think that anyone who's involved in public health and anyone who is a healthcare practitioner needs to be concerned about the differentially undercounted populations in California. The same populations that I serve are people who are served in the public health field and are differentially undercounted. And they are because they are members of racial and ethnic minorities, because they're renters, because they're young people, and because they're recent immigrants. All of the same populations that are served in one capacity or another in public health. What are the most serious issues in the differential undercount? All the populations that I just mentioned are living in similar circumstances. Susan talked about hard to locate housing, talked about recency of immigration, talked about linguistic isolation. All of those have deep implications for differential undercount in the census, and that translates into funding for health programs, housing programs, education programs, employment programs that serve the rural and underserved populations that we most care about. The most important point I think to make about the census undercount and the way the census approaches undercount is that the focus seems to be on motivation and on increasing motivation to participate in the census, when the most serious reasons for undercount are structural. And if all we do is focus on motivation, trying to persuade people through commercials in the Super Bowl that they should participate in the census, we will have missed the boat in census participation and in addressing differential undercount. The most serious things that we need to address are inclusion in the master address file, because a survey, the census, is a mail-out, mail-back survey.
If you're not in the list to which the mail is addressed, then you are not going to receive a form. And if you live in hard-to-locate housing or you live in a complex household, then you are much less likely to be counted. So changes that need to be made in the census and that all of you should be concerned about are changes that address those structural issues. Definitions of residents, definitions of complex households, and reaching hard-to-locate housing and making sure that it's included in the master address file. What the future will bring, finally, is the American Community Survey, which is an inadequate replacement for the long form. The long form sampled a much greater number of people and therefore was able to give us much better attributes, characteristics of smaller public populations and smaller geographic areas. The American Community Survey, unless funding is increased and unless the sample size is increased, will not give us the kind of accuracy that we need. The 2020 census will again be a short form census, and there are efforts underway to make the census voluntary and to make the American Community Survey voluntary. If those efforts are successful, as one person in the front here just chuckled, you can imagine what that will mean to the accuracy of the census. So I think it's incumbent on all of us to pay attention to both the structural issues related to undercount and what is happening politically with the American Community Survey and the 2020 census. Be glad to take questions if there's time. Thank you.